Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bad End Podcast. This is episode 14. Last week, Josh got it wrong. It was not episode 12. It was lucky number 13. But this is a very special episode where I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Josh.
Hi, everyone. It's Josh Calixto of RollingStone.com.
And we have a special guest this week. We have... Is it Josh or just Josh or Joshua? Like, what do you... We have another Josh here.
Joshua's fine. Yeah, I mean, because he goes by Josh, so I'll go by Joshua.
Okay, perfect. Go ahead and introduce yourself and, like, where you write for and your whole thing, I guess.
Got my whole thing. my name's Josh Rivera, and I'm a freelance entertainment journalist. I write about mostly about games and other assorted sundries. For like GQ.com mostly, and then also occasionally like Vulture, and Paste and whatnot. But yeah, that's me. I'm kind of a general entertainment reporter with like, an unfortunate, focus in games.
Oh God, yeah. Emphasis on the unfortunate, man. This field has been just nuts the past couple of years. But anyway, I want to dive right into what we're playing, because I feel like we're sort of saying we haven't played that much, but I feel like we've covered a lot of stuff this week. And I kind of want to kick things off talking about Doki Doki Literature Club, because that was one of those games that was not really on anyone's radar, that kind of sprouted up out of nowhere this week and that got a lot of attention. Did any of you guys play that?
I started it and I have not really played much since, because it has a very slow start. In my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I play a lot of visual novels, and I feel like it took a bit. But I'm interested in it because it's supposed to be really weird. So,
yeah, Josh, did you play any of it by any chance?
No. So the other night, I hit up my buddy and I was like, we should play this game. And like, you know, I just read like the headlines and a few tweets, and I was like, don't say no more, fam. So yeah, I hit my buddy up. I'm like, let's just do this cold, and I think we're gonna maybe like just stream our cold playthrough.
Okay.
At some point. So no, I have not. This is the short answer to the question, but I'm very hyped too.
I want to talk about a couple of things with this game, because first of all, you can't really talk about it without you have to talk about it in a very vague terms if you don't want to give away what happens or why it's good. Or why it's bad, which I feel like is a kind of a common staple of a lot of these games that end up going viral, where if you give away one detail, you're giving away the entire thing. And I feel like that's part of why these games do become so popular, but I also feel like that kind of makes them immune to critique, because the time that I feel like people are most receptive to hearing whether a game is good or bad or is right when it releases. And then after that's sort of what determines whether they'll get it or not. And then after the fact, that kind of falls off, that interest kind of falls off. And where I stand with this game right now is that it does have a really awesome hook. It does a lot of things that I've actually wanted a game of its type to do, but that it takes way too long to get there. That's my main critique of this game. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows going into it that there's kind of like a wait for it, that like the shoe's going to drop, like something's going to happen sooner or later. It even gives you like a warning as soon as you open the game, like this has disturbing content in it. It's basically saying like wait for it type thing. But the wait for it in this case is like legit an hour and a half, 2 hours long. So that is something to definitely be prepared for as you go into Doki Doki Literature Club. You're going to have to play through some like subpar VN experience before you get to the crazy shit. But when you do, I would say that it is worth playing.
would you I think that's kind of what appeals to me about it, right? I mean, like, I don't want to call visual novels like disposable, but they're definitely just they're like the beach reads of games, kind of, right? Like, where it's just like, you know, you play through them and you're done. And I kind of prefer them to have a sort of wait for it, right? I haven't yet played, I haven't actually delved much into dating simulators. I missed out on Dream Daddy, and I've been meaning to get back to it. And like, you know, anything like Hatful Boyfriend and all these other like, you know, fun you know, dating sim-esque visual novels so that have like broken through, right? But I have played like Danganronpa and the Zero Escape games, and those I don't like these plot dumpy things, right? Where it's just sort of like, oh, we're gonna blow your minds, but first we have to understand like these, you know, quantum physics 101, you know, concepts. Yeah. So yeah, like I really like that in a visual novel, and like I'm super into what you're saying here.
And one thing that is interesting about this game is that it's made by a studio that is not Japanese, and you can kind of tell it was one of those games that started as an idea where someone was like, hey, what if X big concept? And then we accept it was in the form of a visual novel. And if you're asking, as sort of I was going into this game, whether it sort of how it actually approaches being a visual novel, because there's so much Japan specific, I guess, imagery and speech and storytelling patterns within those things, because it is a Japanese specific medium. I think it does treat that stuff in a way that is, I guess, respectful. I'm not 100% sure how much respect the visual novel medium demands, but with regards to how it treats Japanese culture and tries to like nod towards that stuff, I think it does a pretty good job of that, and the people who created this game definitely had those topics in mind.
Yeah, it seems really, because I've played a lot of visual novels, like, just growing up, and it was just, like, always a genre I could easily get into with, like, a really shitty PC, and I feel like it's kind of by visual novels' natures to almost go in this weird, they have, like, one weird path that gets, like, really subversive and really strange and really dark, and that's kind of, like, a trend with them, and I feel like in recent years there have been more, not necessarily, like, Western-developed, but, like, not Japanese developed visual novels that kind of do the same thing, but they like really focus on it. It seems like Doki Doki Literature Club is kind of only that, and like Had a Full Boyfriend or that is Japanese developed, but that has like a very dark route if you do all the endings or whatever. Like it's kind of like notorious for like it has this really crazy route, but like, and it got like a lot of press for that, but I feel like a lot of people didn't know that it was literally parodying like the fact that most, like, Otome games do go in these really crazy, weird, dark paths, like, if you do all the endings or whatever. But it's interesting seeing, visual novels that aren't necessarily developed by Japanese developers kind of just, like, be straight up very, like, dark and, like, gritty and, like, do these weird subversive things when they've kind of been in those games always, but just, like, kind of buried underneath, like, a wealth of content.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and I think, you know, to be fair, those first, you know, 45 minutes, hour and a half are not terrible. It's just kind of like passing the time. And I don't think the game necessarily needs that much of a ramp up. I feel like it could have cut that in half and still been just as powerful. One thing I will say is that I feel like this would be so awesome if you could come into it without knowing anything about it. If you were just like the kind of person who went on Itch and just checked out random visual novels, if you were that kind of person, I'm sure they're out there. Hey, here's a new visual novel. I'll download it. It looks to have pretty good production value. And then, you know, an hour and a half in, some crazy shit starts happening that you never expected. But that kind of, just by virtue of the fact that I found about it through this sort of viral nature, it means that I can't, and a lot of others who play this game won't have that type of experience. And that hour and a half lead up does seem like it's made to make the punch hit you that much harder when it does come around. So I can't really fault them for making that opening part of the game that long. I don't know how much else there is to say about this game at the moment, but once you guys do finish it, I would love to talk about it, just because I think it does do some really cool and interesting things towards the end. So we will definitely have a spoiler cast once, you know, Katie finishes it. In the meantime, what have you guys been playing?
I guess I played A Mortician's Tale, which is this very short, bite-sized, literally it's like a mortician simulator in a way. It's like you're playing as this character who's a mortician in a morgue, and basically the whole game is you're preparing bodies for like either cremation or to be buried, and it's really grim, but like the art style is really cute, and it's, and then afterwards you always go to the funeral in the funeral home to like pay your respects, and you like always walk around, like talk to the people around the funeral home, and it's always like, it's weird, like there's people like talking about things totally not related to the funeral, like, you know, relationships, and just like, oh, I can't wait to get out of here, and it's like really grim in a way. But then there's people talking about like, oh, I'm really sad, like this person passed away. And I don't want to like spoil too much because it's only like an hour long game, but there is a point like really early on that really caught me off guard, where, because like before you start the day, you like read your email and you get this email about, or from your boss or whatever, and she's like, so this family's, their son like committed suicide, and they want to have like an open casket burial, but in the person's will, they wanted to be cremated. And she basically says, like, if you're not comfortable with that, I'll have someone else prepare the body and you can do this other thing. Or if you're comfortable with it, you can go ahead and prepare for an open casket. And, like, I just was like, shit, like, I don't know what I would do in that situation. Like, what the fuck?
It's like, holy shit.
It's, like, really dark. And I like, God. Opted to, like, not deal with, I was like, I wouldn't feel comfortable with that personally. It's like, I would wonder if I could sneak in a cremation, you know, like, just like, sorry, like, this is what they wanted,
just
like,
a backdoor cremation,
and, yeah. And it's full of moments like that in this like surprisingly like brief amount of time, and I don't know, I found it like pretty powerful, and kind of like in the same way that 6 Feet Under is really powerful, like the TV show. So I would super recommend it. I think it's out literally Wednesday. We're recording this on Tuesday, so technically tomorrow, but it'll be out by the time this podcast is up. But yeah, it's a really pleasant short experience that I found like really nice, especially in a time where like even indie games are getting longer, and I'm just like, I just like short games. Like, I'm all about short games.
Is it like a visual novel?
Oh, it's not like a visual novel. I didn't even explain like the point of it. It's just like you kind of like walk around this little morgue type area, and then like you have like a body, and it's like a little art thing, and then you kind of, it's kind of like, God, what is it called, Operation a bit, you know, the game Operation, like the board game, it feels a little bit like that, because you're like kind of like interacting with the body.
It's like Trauma as, like, Center
little, oh, it's,
I guess a little bit, but like not center. As like, it's more cute.
So wait, you have to like prepare the bodies?
Yeah, you have to like prepare the bodies, and then for like, if a body's getting cremated, you have to like make an incision and like take out like heart monitors if they have that or something, because it would explode in the fire thing. It's like, okay, this is like, it made me like think about
said,
it.
You said
it's cute. It's weirdly cute. Like, look at that. If you look at the art style, if you Google a mortician simulator or a mortician,
mortician simulator.
Yeah, mortician simulator. Now, if you Google the game, like, you would, it's, like, very, like, pastel-hued. It's all, like, light pinks and, like, purples. And it's weirdly adorable in, like, this really grim way, because you realize, like, oh, these are dead people. I'm, like,
does
preparing.
It feel like what you're doing is, like, a grim act? Does it feel morbid?
It does feel morbid, but it's, like, not, it's not, like, gory or anything, you know? It's not, like, blood, like, splurting out or anything. It's just, like, all, I don't know. It's just weird. Like, the art style makes it feel very strange.
Yeah, I was looking. I mean, I saw a few, like, stills, and it looked very, like, an abstraction, kind of. Like, I don't know if you guys have read that graphic mm-hmm. novel, Asterius Polyp, right? Where...
Mm-mm. No, I haven't read it, but I really want to.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, like you said, like, very pastel-y and abstract, and, like, from looking at screenshots, you'd have to be told that it's about morgues.
Yeah.
Okay. I have one really big, the big question for you, Katie, which okay. Is it fun?
I enjoyed it.
How's the gameplay?
It was a nice 1 hour experience. You click on things, it's great.
How would you rate,
tell me, but...
was it worth the money?
I mean, I had a code, so full disclosure, I got a review code. So
what were the...
I'm writing about it this week. I'm probably going to write about that and 6 Feet. That's probably going to be up by the time this podcast is up. So on usgamer.net, you could probably find me writing about this game at this point in time.
You're going to ask about, like, mechanics?
Yeah, it's going to be all about the mechanics and clicking.
The click feel is smooth with with a great feeling when you make incisions on the bodies.
Is there a high frame rate mode? I'm sorry, I'm going to stop.
High frame.
60 frames per second, baby.
I was really pleasantly surprised by the amount of graphics options that there were.
That's going to be it, yeah. So basically, I'm not going to actually write about all that. Well, I'm going to write about the game, but not about graphics or anything. Because It's just like it's a cute game. I don't know. It's like flat art, but then it's like low poly in cool ways. I don't know how, like, it's so short that there's really, and I don't want to spoil it because it's so short. It's like, there's really not much to, like, talk about without just going deep into spoiler territory. But if you're into, like, weird little nugget indie games that are, like, profound in weird ways, like, I'd recommend it. I don't even know how much it is. It might be, like, $10, maybe? Maybe less. I feel like it's less.
How long did it take you? That's a real question.
Literally an hour. Like, it was, like, not long at all. And that was with me, like, reading every email and being very, like, slow with it.
That's, like...
So I'm sure you could power through it.
That's like
quick.
The best thing I want to hear about a video. Like, literally an hour is like the reader I married him of video games.
Yeah. It's like, oh, great. I can actually play this in the afternoon. Like, that's so nice.
Josh, you played some racing games, right? Some Vroom Vroom.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So, yeah, I'm playing like I'm plunging headfirst into like the Michael Bay sector of video games right now and all like the big loud expensive stuff.
That's what I would like to hear.
So right now it's racing games because Gran Turismo is dropped today, right? Forza. I always trip up on that, forgive me.
Gotta get the
that.
I say Forza.
That's like an Italian thing.
Yeah, I'm
right?
pretty sure it's Italian. but yeah, and that's been out for a couple weeks. So, you know, just doing that, you know, video gamer's favorite thing and comparing. I've not played as much. I'm probably, that's literally the first thing I do after I like get off of this and pick up my laundry and whatnot is just play Gran Turismo because, I haven't had nearly as much time with it, but, it feels like taking medicine. Right? Like, Gran Turismo is just such a sterile package, right? Yeah. It's just like, you either love cars or get the fuck out, right?
Like, I admire that dedication.
Oh, absolutely.
To the car, though. It's like, you know, like, when you're in there, you're like, you entered some sort of club that you are not a fucking part of, but it's like, hey, it's all here, you can do, we got the jazz, we got like the coffee cups in the interface, which I don't really know what that shit is, and then we got like all these parts and stuff that you can buy and like industry terms that you're never gonna understand, but it's all fucking there, right, for you. But and it looks good as hell, so but if you're not into that,
absolutely no. Gran Turismo is definitely like going to church. Like, you are 100, like, you are here for the chrome, and Forza is like, you know what, I bet you I can get you to like cars, you know, it's much friendlier, it's sort of like a, yeah, not quite a bar, not quite a coffee shop, it's for, you know, like serious people and their friends, so yeah, I think actually that's the one thing I dislike about Forza is that I'm like Goldilocksing this so hard, but Forza will actually help you too much, I think, right? So if you like, if you start it will turn on literally all the assists and you have to like manually turn them off, right? Like I'm racing through and like the car is braking for me as I take these turns too hard, and it's like, well, you know, you gotta, if you love me, let me go, Forza, like, just So yeah, it's these two extremes, and I'm not quite sure how to, like, the content demands that I compare them, but it doesn't really feel fair.
Can we have a conversation about why are racing games good? Because every time I play, I really want to play Forza. I've never really played a Forza game in my life. Your pitch about like how it's like Gran Turismo, but, you know, more welcoming to people who aren't car people. That's like totally seems like my thing. But every time I play one of these games where it's like realistic driving, even the ones that are like more fun, like Dirt or something, which is like a rally car game where it's supposed to be like, yeah, man, get your shit dirty and stuff. It's just like you're just trying to take these turns as well as you can. Like that's the entire dynamic of the game. Try to press the brake at the right time. And maybe that's reductive, but maybe I feel like I'm missing something. I feel like there's something that's there that I'm not getting. Is that the case? I mean, can you speak authoritatively enough to tell me whether I'm missing something?
I'm so glad you asked me this question. All right. So one, yes.
Okay, good.
And two, I have spent most of my like racing gaming life looking for someone to make the perfect racing game, which is eluded me, right? Like, okay, so I have two perfect racing games. The first is Midnight Club Los Angeles, which is the PS3, Xbox 360. I think it's technically the fourth Midnight Club because the first three were all PS2.
Isn't that Rockstar?
Yeah, one of their myriad studios that they had right before they consolidated and reorganized and whatnot.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that team is gone now. or at least, you know, absorbed into the other teams. But yeah. So the thing about Midnight Club Los Angeles was it was straight up arcadey, right? It was an open world racing game, but it also had like the sim gearhead esque tuning to these cars, in addition to like the aesthetic tuning, you know, the aesthetic customization. Like you could create decals and paint jobs and you know, like it had every set of rims, and you could also like, you know, put money into like your fuel injectors and like your suspension and all this other stuff, and the actual, so you could actually like build this car. But it didn't play like a Forza or Gran Turismo, where it's just sort of like these subtle differences where you had to worry about like your anti-lock brakes and all these other stuff, right? So it was like this perfect, you know, blend of just sort of like simulation, taking ownership of these cars, right? And just pure arcadey action. And if you lost a race, you lost your car. I mean, not every race, but if they were like these pink slip races. And if you lost a pink slip race, there goes that car that you put all this work into, right? So it was this constant thing of like, you know, just like building out your garage and showing off your cars and like, you know, taking this pride in them and putting them on the line. And I freaking loved it, man. It was the best racing game, the most fun and most time I've put into a racing game. And I still remember like what most of my cars looked like in that game. And like I haven't had that game in years. And then the first Grid, which is actually another Codemasters game. Codemasters makes Dirt.
Right.
And Grid was kind of like the same thing, but with just more traditional racing. And it was like you were building a driving team, kind of, right? So it had this more pristine sort of presentation. It was built around events, like much like, you know, Forza is and racing series, I think. But it was like this, it was cool. It was about, just building out a team. It had like this football manager style approach to racing, didn't actually prevent you from racing yourself. Like you racing and, you know, collecting cars was very much a part of it. But for some reason, Dirt kept getting sequels and Grid got only one, and it was less interesting than the first. And yeah, that's my rant. I'm sorry. This is something I think about a lot, and very few people care enough about racing games for me to like vent in this way.
Katie, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say that sounds way more interesting than any modern racing game, because I feel like they all, because I played a little bit of Forza, I don't know, I say Forza too, whatever, Motorsport 7, not this year's, but the, or no, not this year's, the Horizon, so the one that's in Australia, yeah, and that one's like really, it has like an arcadey feel, but it's like just, you just drive around really pretty environments, and that's like the gist of it. Like, it's not really, I'm not into cars or anything. Like, I cannot name the difference between any cars. Like, I'm just really not. That's not my field. But I don't know. Like, I've always, like, just generally went in the direction of stuff like Burnout, where it's not really about the cars at all. It's about, like, just crashing and shit. Or, like, kart racing games, which are not obviously realistic at all. It's like Mario Kart or Crash Team Racing. So, I don't know. Like, that sounds like that Midnight Club or whatever. That sounds really interesting. It's, like, almost a permadeath of you putting all this work into one vehicle and then just being like, oh, yeah, shit, well, that's gone. Like, that's it. And that sounds, like, really cool. That's like, a clever idea. Yeah. And I wish that sounds cooler than what I hear about now, where it's just like, how realistic is this game? Let's see. And that's kind of boring. Like, why not have more fun with the Formula?
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. There's that, like, there aren't really, I mean, I guess there just isn't money in, like, risky racing games, right? There was a moment, right, that Burnout era, like around Burnout Paradise, where there are a few, right? Like, there was a Disney shuttered, I think, Avalanche Studios it was. They had Split Second, which was basically like driving in a Michael Bay movie. And a few other like weird things like that. But like, yeah, there's not a lot of like differentiation in racing games right now, and it kind of sucks.
Yeah. At the same time, I feel like a lot of these things where we talk about and I think we'll kind of touch on this a little bit later in the episode as well, but when we sort of start to lament the death of one thing, or we start to think about, you know, one category of game kind of drawing to a close, you start seeing other iterations of it pop up in other spaces that are just like maybe not as obvious. Because I feel like we've seen new types of driving games, if not necessarily racing games, sprout up recently. A lot of them that simulate the components of racing games in a little bit more of loving ways. One of a game that I actually really enjoy is Euro Truck Simulator, in which you're operating this huge big rig truck and taking it across the country or across Europe, and a lot of that is putting love into these cars and creating your own shipping business with these trucks and taking them out to the open road, and it's still feeling the sensation of driving and how careful you have to be when doing that stuff, and just like feeling the wind on your face as you go through this. But it's sort of feeling out these different nuances of the experience that aren't go fast all the time, but also, you know, put some love into your car, make sure that you can ship the right things, do the jobs that suit you, and then also like listen to the fucking radio, because you can tune into radio stations that are actually live and listen to the radio as you're driving through these places that are sometimes fairly accurate.
Yeah. And also to get back to your original question, right? Like, what are you missing from these games, right? Specifically like the Forza and the Gran Turismos. And this is something that, like, I'm just learning about myself. I'm not sure it's for me, but it's just sort of, like, just learning how to race cleanly, right? How to just have mastery over your car. Ideally without these assists, right? How to do a good, clean pass, and, like, how to not freaking use another car as a buffer between you and the corner. And do, like, these arcadey things that you do. The games lean into this with like their assists and like their guides and stuff like that, but they really push you to do it with like their online systems, right? Like they both have skill systems that rank you by how well you drive, and you're only allowed to race with people online that drive as well as you do. So it's sort of like a personal sense of progress and prestige. The better you drive, and the higher rank of driver that you get to race.
And this is something that I wish racing games would pick up on, that I wish a lot of video games these days would pick up on, is that the one thing that always eludes me, that always prevents me from getting into these genres like racing games, like fighting games, that require these very kind of specific skill sets that you can see, that you can like, you can tell, okay, to do this race optimally, I will have to, you know, take the apex of each turn, know how to draft off the cars in front of me, all these random details and skills that you can't necessarily just pick up if you don't know about them. They require some specific knowledge beforehand. And so what happens is you have the community teach each other these skills. But if you're not a part of the community, you have no clue what's going on, which I think is why YouTube has really blown up in the video game scene, because education is such a thing that YouTube has taken into its own hands. hey, today we're teaching you how to do this this one thing, how to do the apex of a turn. And it's like a 20-minute video of this British dude talking to you about how to take a fucking turn in a video game. And I think that stuff is constructive and it's good, but it's also so unguided and something that you have to take into your own hands that it's hard for your average player to get into this stuff, right? And I wish that some video games, particularly video games where that learning curve is so high or where those skills are so obscure right off the bat, like racing games, I wish it would take some of that stuff a little bit more into their own hands. And I feel like some of them have done that. You even have like some narrators where it's like, hey, great job. You just took that turn really well. And like they have those, the little like line that you can see when you're going around corners and stuff. But I wish it would be like there's an entire mode dedicated to like showing you the ropes. And it's like hours and hours long. And then when you're done with that, you feel like you're actually like a baller at this game.
It's weird because like there is a focus that they have in like walking you through certain things, but it's not necessarily like how to be good at playing them. It's just learning the differences in all these different vehicle classes and sort of events and series and game modes, more or less, right? And that's sort of like the frustrating thing about them too, because it's sort of like I could love these games more than I do, which is like I don't love them, I like them. I could love them if they did that. I'm just gonna have to settle for liking them because they don't. I think Forza Horizon, like you were saying, is just the probably closest because it's just like it's playing Hot Wheels. Like it's just sort of like this looks cool, do cool stuff with it. Literally they added a Hot Wheels expansion with like the crazy loop de loops too. So it's wild. I totally feel you there.
It always reminds me of that, like, that one meme where it's like, here's how to draw a person. And then it's like, draw the outline of the body, make circles for each, like the head, the arms, and then the hands. And then the next step is like a fully drawn portrait of a human. Like,
yeah. Has anybody ever like, I don't know how to whistle. And the first thing people always say when you tell them that you don't know how to whistle, they say it's easy. And then they whistle. like that helps.
That's very true. Yeah, I can't whistle. Like it's like a wow. low yeah. thing. I don't know.
That's like a lisp. That's like a whistle that people who have lisps will do on accident.
I used to have a lisp, so maybe it has something to do with it. It's like I like had to go to speech therapy like all of my childhood. So.
Well, yeah.
That's probably it.
My dad does that whistle too, where it's like more with your teeth.
Yeah, it's like a horse. Like I don't know, I just can't do it.
Yeah,
I've tried. I like Googled it once when I was younger because I was curious, and I was like, I can't. I just don't know how. Like my tongue just can't do it.
I don't know how to do the whistle where you put the two fingers in your mouth.
Oh, I've always wanted to.
Oh yeah, those are crazy.
Those are nuts. Dude. It's like
people. They're so loud.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you doing? It's like they cup it. It's like, oh, it's weird.
That's like also a dope skill. Like when someone can do that, you're like.
Hell yeah, this dude.
Is my dude right here.
Pretty, yeah.
Okay. I played one more game, which was a game called Universal Paperclips. Did any of you guys play this? It's a clicking game.
Oh, I heard about it.
Yeah, it's if you guys have ever played Cookie Clicker or any of these games where you just like infinitely click on a thing. this was made by Frank Lentz, so it's a smart one.
Okay. Are there like facts in it?
Which is to
like
say,
fun facts?
No, but what it's cool about this game is that it actually gives you, feel like this texture to the way that you accumulate clicks. Every click equates to one paper clip, right? And then slowly, once you start accumulating paper clips, you can start creating like the systems with which to create more paper clips at a faster rate at less cost to your own self. So what's funny is that you're still clicking on shit, right? It's just not the constant make a paperclip over and over. Instead, it's like, okay, make a paperclip maker. Okay, now that you made a paperclip maker, now make a thing that makes you wires infinitely. Then you start creating like AI that will then figure out the best way to slot in the amount of paperclip makers that you make and the amount of wire makers that you make. So you are slowly like building up technology, levels of technology and industry to the point where you basically reach a technological singularity due to the amount of paperclips that you're making and the resources that you're putting into that. You start running like, sorry, this is actually spoiler alert, but you start creating.
I'm not going to play this game.
You start having. I mean, again, all you're doing is clicking on stuff, which I guess you could reduce any video game to that. But I guess that's what's cool about this one is that you start feeling the texture of how you're building these systems and you start seeing the timing of technological progress in this sense. There's like a lot of proportional differences between, say, making 100 paperclips by hand and making them using AIs that you've built. So I think that's a kind of cool little clicker game that you could play if you are ever curious and feeling these textures of the technological singularity.
It's like Civilization, built with paperclips.
Exactly.
Did you ever play the Crazy Taxi clicker that came out earlier this year?
No.
No. Oh, the writing in it is really good. It's like really self-aware and weird, and it's just literally a clicker game on your phone. But it's literally a really well-written Crazy Taxi clicker game, and it like is super weird.
One thing I want to say about this game is there is this crazy moment where you like you take your own job basically, where like at first you're the one doing the clicking, and then like you create systems that can do it like 100,000 times better than you can, and you're just like, I screwed myself over.
That's pretty good.
So there are these moments in this game that make you think, you know.
So. Damn,
that's what happens when you play a Frank Lance clicker, baby. You think about stuff.
Paper clips and ontology got heavy on my mind, B, you know.
Exactly. Are we good to take a break now, or is there anything else you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good.
Cool. Be right back. Box thing, because I get that people are mad about the loot boxes thing, but was there something that kicked it off? Was it like someone just
it was Middle Earth, Shadow of War, that was the big, and Battlefront 2 also has them,
which so is like that like same week
big things. Yeah.
So what's Forza. The controversy, just people are just mad that loot boxes exist?
It's very much like a Rubicon felt like it was crossed with Shadow of War, because it's a primarily single player game. Because the loot boxes have orcs, which is or what you need to level up your army, and otherwise you'd be facing a grind, right? So which is sort of like this affects how you play the game. It's not purely cosmetic, and people just, you know, the consumerist argument about, you know, like, I already spent money on this game. Right. That's kind of the summation of it, right? With Forza, it's a little more egregious on its face, because they just stripped away stuff from the VIP, from the game and from the VIP version of the game as well, to sort of loot boxify them.
And then
people are just mad that they exist in Battlefront 2.
Also, there was a lot of talk about the Blizzard ones and how they implement them, because Blizzard's whole model is a tad, people would say, nefarious, because of the fact that you don't know what you're getting in a box, and that makes it, in essence, sort of like gambling. And I think that's kind of what happens in a lot of loot boxes in these games, right? There's like a shit ton of stuff. You're not 100% sure what you're getting when you buy these loot boxes. Is that correct? Or is it all like a predetermined, you're going to get these four items if you buy the like strong orc box, or the cute orc box, or like the funny orc box.
I wish that would be funny, or I would like that if they were like labeled like, what type of orc do you want to join your team?
Just
let's see.
Just babes.
I want a cute one.
Babe orcs only.
Are there any women orcs?
I don't.
Or is it just men? I feel like it's always been just men, right?
I think it's just men, like male, just male or orcs. Like I, yeah. Or that present as male. I don't really know how orcs.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Do they have any concept of gender?
I don't really. Okay, so like my only sort of like deal, like I'm sure fucking Tolkien has an appendix somewhere where this is described, but like I just remember how the. What do you call it? The Lord of the Rings movies depicted it where they just fucking dug them out of the earth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where it's like they're like gross, slimy things. Yeah. Like it was just like they're literally children born of the earth.
Yeah. So like I don't actually know how orcs work.
Yeah.
But they seem like they're all dudes.
I mean, in Shadow of War, they're just born out of loot boxes, it seems. So that's just like
when a boy loot box and a girl loot box love each other very much.
Are there good orcs in this game?
Like you join them on your team, or you can like have them on your side.
But don't you like mind you enslave them?
Yeah, you enslave them.
Oh, I didn't know it was that. I thought it was just like you brainwash them a little bit.
No, because
that's not happy.
So you are half ranger, which is like what Viggo Mortensen Aragorn. Mm-hmm. And you are also half ghost. You have this asshole ghost named Celebrimbor, who's a wraith. He really is. That's his biggest defining trait. He's just a raging asshole. But he's a wraith.
The first one.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you know all about him then.
Yeah, the dude. Like, and then the game ends in like a QTE. It's great. but yeah, I don't know. Like, have you played the new one at all?
Who, me?
No.
Or no?
I have.
Yeah. You have?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't, it's just, like, so basically this loot box controversy, it seems like it's all fine, like, the whole game, you can go through, like, most of the game, fine, but from what I've heard is, like, you get to this end game grind, and that's where the loot boxes come into play, because they're not purely cosmetic, it's like you can get orcs and loot boxes, and, like, gameplay things that help you out. So it makes the grind, like, not as tedious.
Yeah.
So that seems to be where the controversy lies. And then Battlefront 2 also had the beta, which revealed that you can just basically there's pay-to-win stuff. Like, you can just buy a expensive special thing, like a special droid or whatever to help you in battle or, like, play as or, like, a hero. So it seems like these two games are signaling a change in not just cosmetic shit, which is kind of what Blizzard just does. Like, Overwatch, like, nothing's gonna improve your gameplay. Like, you're only as good as the game is what you bring into it.
I don't know.
But you can get cool skins.
When I'm playing in some of those skins, I definitely feel like I could play it better. It's like putting on my Jordans, you know?
Yeah. That's true. Like, when I put on, like, my Santa Torbjorn skin, it's like,
my Curry's, baby.
Jolly today.
Put on those Steph Curry's.
Those are the ugliest fucking shoes. Oh my god.
My Hot Watch Genji is still like my pride and joy.
Can I really just quickly say before you go on, Katie, I want to say that I also hate content in games that you are given that you don't want. Like, I just got the new Alone in the Evil Within, and they gave me like 15, like, I don't know why they gave me these. Maybe because, like, I got it in the first week or something, but it's, like, 15 items. You get, like, 13 potions, a free pistol, stuff that, like, you wouldn't have gotten in the game. And I'm like, I don't want this. You're giving me a handicap here. Like, can't, like, it's like, I guess this is how people felt when U2 put the song in their iTunes. Like, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a free thing, but I don't want this. And this actually does affect gameplay, because now I have to, like, say, no, I don't want to use this fucking gun that you just gave me. And even though I feel in, then I start feeling, like, ungrateful that I didn't use your, like, burst fire pistol that you just gave me, when clearly I'm supposed to be using the pea shooter at this point in the game.
Yeah. And like, that's also, I completely neglected to mention, that's a game I've been playing too. And I've never been more acutely aware of how difficulty affects horror than with that game.
Like, exactly.
I put it on casual, because it's just like, I just don't have time. Like, I wanted, like, I knew this was going to be bigger, and I wanted to see as much of it as I could, as quickly as I could. But, like, the game's really easy on casual, and I'm not scared of anything. And, like, that's a huge problem. Anyway, that's a whole digression. I
feel like Dark Souls gave me some of these like free type of weapons too, or something like that. Like there was like some game that was like supposed to be hard. Anyway, sorry, Katie, go on.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally forgot what I was
saying. You're talking about how it's not just for cosmetic things.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the problem, I guess. So my big thing is I just don't give a shit about anything. Like, I just don't care about loot boxes. I can't bring myself to care about loot boxes. Like, I get why people are mad, I guess, but the thing is they're still optional. Like, it's not, you could still beat Shadow of War without ever spending any money. People have already exploited it. Like, there's already an exploit. So it's like, I don't know, like, I just don't get it. I just don't get the anger, the ire of people everywhere. It's just not that big of a deal to me. It's like, I don't know, like, maybe but I also think I'm part of the problem. I buy loot boxes, like, for every Overwatch event. Like, I bought loot boxes for Battlegrounds during the Invitational. Like, I'm totally part of the problem, so I guess I shouldn't be talking.
Well, also, like, part of it was just sort of, like, the messaging the game gives you, right? Because there is a bonus ending, right? If you mm-hmm. grind your way to the end of Shadow Wars, right? So it I think it would have gone down easier if, like, Shadow Wars, which is, like, the whole fourth... It's pretty much just play with the Nemesis system because everything else is done, mm-hmm. right? If that just existed as sort of, like, a single-player endgame, right? That, like, you know, it's just borrowed the MMO convention of just having you just grind for better stuff because you just like the game that much. Mm-hmm. Like, it probably would have gone down easier. But, like, just this weird decision to hide a little bit of story, you know, behind it, right, and incentivize you to finish it and sort of, like, prey on your completist tendencies is part of the reason why I think this has gone down so poorly. And, like, we can talk about, like, the attitudes that foster that mentality till the cows come home, right? Like,
right.
there's everything we're talking about has a million implications towards, like, cultures that have been built up and encouraged either implicitly or complicitly for as long as games have kind of been around, right? Like these attitudes towards sort of like completion and what is mine and what I'm entitled to and what is exploitation, right? And what is fair. And we're sort of like reckoning with all these ideas now. And mm-hmm. and because it's tied to something so specific, which is loot boxes, which actually isn't that specific, right? There are so many different ways that they're implemented used, right? And enjoyed. that, like, it's not even all that useful to just talk about our loot boxes bad, right? So, yeah, it's a big, ugly mess. And we're all talking our way around a lot of things. And that's what makes this conversation so frustrating.
There's a big extent to which it is optics. It's just like, mm-hmm. this is a bad move on their part.
Yes.
Like, you can do the loot box thing. You can create this internal system that people will still buy a lot of that isn't going to piss off the Redditors or whatever, or the people on NeoGAF. And I think this is an optics problem in this scenario. But that, for instance, Overwatch or something like that doesn't have as big of an issue because people are more okay with the fact that it's more cosmetic. But I wanted to get a little bit into the whole game as a service thing, mm-hmm. because today we saw the shutting down of a pretty big studio. Katie, do you want to go into a little bit more detail about this? Because you wrote a bit about it today.
Yeah, so Visceral Games, who are known for Dead Space and also the very not good Battlefield Hardline.
Oh, that's right. That was them.
As of yet, that was them.
Oh man.
That was a rough little like moment for them. But anyway, they did Dead Space, which is amazing. Like, I love Dead Space. And then they did they were working on the Star Wars game. They hired Amy Hennig, who was the writer for the first three Uncharted games, and Kim Swift was over there too, who worked on Portal, and there's someone else too that was pretty notable. Anyway, so they just had this dream team working on a linear adventure Star Wars game. Like, it was like, we're basically making Uncharted but a Star Wars game. Like, that was the big pitch, and it was really exciting. Like, I was looking for, I'm not into Star Wars, but it's like, I like Uncharted, I don't know, whatever. And today EA announced that they were shutting down Visceral Games, and they were shifting the development of this not named, not really, like, they barely showed it off, like, this mysterious Star Wars title to EA Vancouver, I think. And it seems up in the air if Amy Hennig is still involved. I don't know about any of the, like, literally, there's, like, a statement that came out that was, like, yeah, like, her role is up in the air, basically. Like, they're just still figuring it out. Yeah. So it's, like, and it does, well, the big news thing was that the direction of the game's changing. It's going to be, like, going towards a broader experience, which, and it was, like, very PR speak, but it definitely seemed like they're either going, one, open world with it, or two, games as a service-y, like, you know, just Destiny-like. Like, it was definitely seemed like going either of those routes by how they're talking about it. Basically, the big thing was, like, it's not going to be, like, a linear adventure game anymore. It's going to be, like, totally different. So it's not even the game that was originally pitched as the in the first mm-hmm. place. So it's, like, this really sad trend, like, that, I don't know. It's, like, I don't think, like, single-player games are dead. Like, there are so many that are coming out, but there are also, like, a lot that are failing. Like, Middle-earth and, like, Evil Within 2 are already not selling well. And, like, those just came out last week. And earlier, like, there are games that do really well. Like, Horizon did, like, excellent for Sony, but it was also a Sony exclusive. So it's, like, and I feel like word of mouth really helped that game. And, like, Nier Automata, same thing, where it was, but they're also both victim to the open world trend, where, like, I don't think the open world has helped either of those games. Like, in Nier Automata, like, my favorite game of the year, like, I think it hurt that game. And I don't know, it's just, like, this weird thing. Like, Resident Evil 7 is the only game in recent memory that I can remember that wasn't a single player but wasn't open world, you know? It was, like, very linear. And it's sad to see this shift, because I wish that linear games existed more frequently, because they're, like, in my, like, I like shorter games. I don't have a lot of time on my hands. I appreciate a good 10-hour game, even if it's just, like, a bunch of hallways or whatever, like, people like to say linear games are. But, yeah, it's a huge disappointment. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, like, the subtext, right, is to this, isn't so much that linear games are dead. It's just, like, publishers saying, we can't make enough money off of them, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's legitimate concerns there, right? Like, the video games have not, you know, have stayed at a fixed $60 price as inflation has gone up and costs have risen. Gamers as a demographic are an acerbic bunch when it comes to doing anything other than, you know, spending the money up front for the game, right? Subscriptions are kind of anathema. Did I pronounce that right?
I'm not 100% sure, to be honest.
You know, like, season passes are, I guess, do well enough for people to keep doing them. I haven't actually looked at numbers on season passes. Mm. But, like, there is this opportunity to make money off of games as a service. And EA's, I think, has openly stated that, like, that's what they want to do with all of their games, from if I'm remembering what I read correctly.
Yeah, it sounds right.
And so is every other, you know, big-name publisher. This is where they see the money being, and the linear, you know, play it and done sort of game does not support the revenue streams that kind of game can bring in.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like what's funny about those game, the single player games that you mentioned, KD2, were mostly Japanese developed. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of something that it seems like Japan is still working well with, the single player oriented experience that has a couple DLC packs that they put out and that people can buy, and they are happy with that model as of now. But it does seem like, and again, I think it's also important to emphasize that this is a AAA thing specifically, right?
Yes.
We're talking about the death of, quote, single player experiences, single player games, but that is strictly a AAA thing. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know how much we really need to lament the death of solely single-player-oriented games from these AAA companies, because I feel like this is something that we've been dealing with for, you know, ever since DLC became a thing. all of these big studios who put millions and millions of dollars into making these games have always been finding new ways to put price tags beyond the $60 that they're charging you for it originally. Mm-hmm. The thing is that right now it's starting to interfere a little bit more with the gameplay itself in a few more ways, I suppose. But people have always been mad about DLC. They have always been mad about developers trying to make an extra buck on off of you. And I wouldn't say that, like, the great games of the past decade have been from these studios. And maybe that's... I might have to, like, look through some lists and get back to you on this next week. But when I think of my favorite games, it's not, like, some Ubisoft massive game where... barring multiplayer games that, like, that don't really apply to this discussion. I think there's like a good Assassin's Creed game, two good Assassin's Creed games. I think there's like Call of Duty is not relevant, and that's like the big AAA game. Naughty Dog is a developer that just purely makes these games and doesn't seem to be going in that direction, so I don't think we have to worry much about them. I just think that as far as the scope of this is concerned, AAA is like very insular, and we've already seen this type of thing from them in the past decade, so I don't think we should be that surprised or mourn it that much.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's two things right here that come to mind. One is like, it's easy to sort of, like, hand-wring about, like, games as service and, like, this stuff going away from AAA studios, mostly because there's this sort of, like, consumerist cult of allegiance, right, when it comes to big-budget video games, right, where everything feels like a personal slight or is encouraged to you're courage to have a personal stake in. But really, it's there. The reality is the average person, right, even a teenager who has all the time in the world to sit home and play video games, can only fit maybe two games as a service kind of games into their lives, because the whole point of them is to keep you playing them and, you know, to keep coming back for daily and weekly rewards, to grind for an end game, to keep doing that. There's only so much time in a day, right? Like, World of Warcraft wasn't enough for most of us in high school, and that kept us plenty busy. Right? So, like, everyone is in the AAA market is sort of rushing to this bottleneck. And that bottleneck, like, because game development's so slow, that bottleneck was probably going to be 4 or 5 years away from now. But, like, it's coming really fast. There's not enough money or attention or energy in the world to support a landscape where every game does this. And the second is, like, everyone is just dancing around the fact that AAA gaming as we know it is running on fumes. It's going to implode. Everyone I've talked to articulates it. They sort of like shrug and say, oh, is this sustainable? Probably not. But like, no one will actually come out and say, fucking video games are heading straight to a wall. They're going to crash. And we need to figure out what things are going to look like after that, like now. Or at least people making games do, because like, they're all going to be out of jobs. Or health. Because, you know, you read these stories and everyone's burning themselves out and there's no senior level talent. And so, no one's talking about the implosion of video games. I'm a little upset that I'm talking about it now because I'm going to write about it. But also, like I said, I'm a lamestream writer and gaming sites don't care about what I say anyway. So, but like, it's absurd. It's absurd that, like, no, it's like climate change, you know, like no one's talking about it.
No, yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, I wrote a piece today about how, like, everyone was like, the like single player games are dead. When they're not dead, they're just all going towards these either one games as a service type things where, like, Destiny, you could play that solo. Like, it's not multiplayer in the traditional sense. So it's like games going like that route, or they're going open world where it's just like an endless huge world for you to explore and blah blah blah. And I feel like both of those are just like not, and then there's season passes on top of that too, and it's just there's so many games with just so much shit to offer. Mm-hmm. Like hundreds and hundreds of hours of gameplay, and they want you to play every day. They basically like want to become part of your life. Like that's the thing, is they want to be like your the one game you buy a year, and that's like the only thing you're funneling money into and the only thing you're playing. And it's just, yeah, I don't see it as sustainable. That's why a lot of games I see like failing. It's just like, you know, like Destiny 2 sold really well because that's the only game kind of doing that right now in a way. But it's like, as these other games are coming out and are like boasting it and like turning more in that direction, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Assassin's Creed does not do well, because it's like, one, it's been like 2 years or whatever, and two, it's like straight up just a more open world game, and I wouldn't be surprised if that hurts it. But yeah, like, I don't see AAA games doing the crazy numbers that they used to, you know? It's like, you see Grand Theft Auto 5 is always selling, just because Grand Theft Auto 5, like, it's always at the top of like the monthly charts. And then you see like games being like kind of like word of mouth hits, like Nier Automata, mm-hmm. where that sold like crazy because everyone was telling their friends, like, you gotta play this game. And that seems to be like the way that games are hits nowadays. It's like people spreading the word online. Like, it, like, just marketing alone isn't enough anymore. And that's just how the landscape's changed.
So are we happy or are we sad about this?
Like, me as a person, like, I want to just, I would love if games just chill the fuck out for a bit and let me play everything I have on these hard drives.
That's true.
But, I mean, it's just sort of, I don't know. I mean, I guess it just comes down to, you know, like, where the money is. And, like, can these smart people that I see out there making games, these smart small studios, can they get that money to continue doing smart things and pushing the medium forward and contributing interesting ideas to the space? Like, if there's a way for them to survive that, then that's great. Then let it all fucking burn. But like, if not, then I don't know. Like, I don't know what to say.
I kind of feel happy about this, because I feel like the way that things are moving right now, it's a lot easier for me to just ignore a big game like Shadow of War. Yeah. I don't really ever want to play that game. I played the first one. I know this is going to be more of the same, and I know that people wanted more of the same. But I didn't necessarily, so I can skip that one fairly comfortably, and it's no real skin off my, you know, whatever. But I also feel like there are more resources and more space for people to be inventive, for new auteurs to pop up, for new creators to pop up, because of the way that word spreads, because of the way that, like, things go viral these days. I feel like we have so many more games that end up making top year of the Game of the Year lists and things like that that we've never heard of, never seen before, that are people's just like projects where they're pursuing this new idea that's never been done before because they have a passion for it, because they're willing to put the work into it, and because at the end of the day, there's a lot more chances for them to actually succeed at it. If it's like one person making a video game, that is, it's possible to create a hit. And that does bring its own implications that are ugly and that still need to be figured out. But for me, as a person who plays games and who likes to have like new single player experiences, we have a lot of good shit coming out this year on both, you know, the big AAA level and the lower, smaller studio level. And that's something that I am really glad to be seeing more of.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I don't know. I'm a little less. I mean, like, I'm kind of with you, Josh, but I'm also like, that's like me selfishly, right? Like, I don't want to call you selfish, but
no, that is totally the me selfishly
angle. But also, like, I would mourn the loss of a game that everyone is playing, right? Or a game that like a sizable population is playing enough that you can look at it and it says something about us, right? Like,
that's a really
like
good point.
You know, Grand Theft Auto Online. You know, just the dynamics of that game and the economics and the way that it flows. I think is it Zach Swisen who covers GTA Online for Kotaku, I think. And I'm talking about sort of like the housing rush, and how crime is spreading to the sort of like the wealthier parts of Los Santos. And how it's just really weird because it has that same dynamic of like white flight and all these other things that we see in real culture and stuff. And like how sort of like games present themselves as sort of like these neutral systems, right? But they're really not. They're made by people who, you know, they're products of culture, right? And it's useful to see they're useful in that they're these isolated systems that we can see our cultural biases through, right? And our you know, maybe some things that are harmful. I think games are incredibly, unfortunately, helpful at seeing some really bad aspects of our culture. I think as a lens, they're infinitely valuable. And I would hate to lose that. I would hate their mass appeal to go away and sort of like deprive us of this lens.
You bring up a really good point, because I have really seen within the past 2 or 3 years, even just the moniker of like a quote gamer really start to break up into, and this is something that I think people have wanted for a while, but we're also reckoning with the implications of that. Like you're saying, that there's no like one game that everybody's playing anymore. You have a lot of people who will, I feel like people are getting more comfortable saying, I just don't like single player games. All I play is esports. Yeah. All I play is multiplayer games. Mm-hmm. And that like the single player is kind of like a breed of its own that's sort of starting to like even out, or it's not something where it's like artificially inflated, because all you can play is a single player game now. You have people who are just playing a casual game, who are just playing this thing or whatever. And so I feel like the narrative game genre is something that is becoming just one category, whereas it used to be the be all mm-hmm. end all. Which in itself is an implication that is kind of worth mourning.
Yeah.
I think you know, Josh, you probably have some laundry to pick up pretty soon, so I feel ready to wrap up if we're good.
Yeah, that's yeah. I got my piece, and I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening. Thanks again to you, Joshua, for coming on to the show. Why don't you tell people where they can find you, what your social media is, or you know, whatever you feel like
plugging. Oh yeah, I mean, like Twitter is probably the best place to find me. I am at jmrivera02. It's inelegant, and I love it. and my name is Joshua Rivera, and you can find my writing on games and entertainment and superheroes and whatnot on GQ.com usually. I make bad jokes on Twitter.
And he is, everybody, I'm being 100% genuine here when I say Josh is really, really freaking good, and you should read his stuff. So go do that for sure. And while you are at it, we are Bad End Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. You can email us badendpod@gmail.com. You can also like us on Facebook, and also rate us and review us on iTunes. I just remembered that we did get a viewer email, so I do feel like shit, but we will address that on the next episode. I promise you, dude. Thank you so much for emailing us. I have not forgotten you, and we will get back to you in a couple weeks. But in the meantime, thanks again for listening, and we will see you in a few later. I'm gonna go to the top.